place unbitten. This dome shall stand for a year and a day, and then cease, unless you shall before the term come to Minas Tirith, and present yourself to the lord and steward of the city. Then I will entreat him to confirm what I have done, and to make it lifelong. In the meantime, whomsoever you take under your protection shall be under my protection, and under the shield of Gondor. Are you answered?" Frodo bowed low. "I am answered," he said, "and I place myself at your service, if that is of any worth to one so high and honourable." "It is of great worth," said Faramir. "And now, do you take this creature, this Smeagol, under your protection?"
"I do take Smeagol under my protection," said Frodo.
Sam sighed audibly, and not at the courtesies, of which, as any hobbit would, he thoroughly approved. Indeed, in the Shire, such a matter would have required a great many more words and bows. "Then I say to you," said Faramir, turning to Gollum, "you are under doom of death, but while you walk with Frodo, you are safe for our part. Yet if ever you be found by any man of Gondor astray without him, the doom shall fall, and may death find you swiftly, within Gondor or without, if you do not well serve him. Now answer me, whither would you go?" "You were his guide," he says. "Whither were you leading him?" Gollum made no reply. "This I will not have secret," said Faramir. "Answer me, or I will reverse my judgment." Still Gollum did not answer.
"I will answer for him," said Frodo. "He brought me to the Black Gate, as I asked, but it was impassable."
"There is no open gate into the Nameless Land," said Faramir.
"Seeing this, we turned aside and came by the southward road," Frodo continued, "for he said that there is, or there may be, a path near to Minas Ithil."
"Minas Morgul," said Faramir.
"I don't know clearly," said Frodo, "but the path climbs, I think, up into the mountains on the northern side of that vale where the old city stands. It goes up to a high cliff, and so down to that which is beyond."
"Do you know the name of that high pass?" said Faramir.
"No," said Frodo.
"It is called Cirith Ungol."
Gollum hissed sharply, and began muttering to himself.
"Is not that its name?" said Faramir, turning to him.
"No," said Gollum, and then he squealed, as if something had stabbed him. "Yes, yes, we heard the name once, but what does the name matter to us? Master says he must get in, so we must try some way. There is no other way to try, no."
"No other way?" said Faramir. "How do you know that? And who has explored all the confines of that dark realm?" He looked long and thoughtfully at Gollum. Presently he spoke again. "Take this creature away, unborn. Treat him gently, but watch him. And do not you, Smeagol, try to dive into the falls. The rocks have such teeth there as would slay you before your time. Leave us now and take your fish." Unborn went out, and Gollum went cringing before him. The curtain was drawn across the recess. "Frodo, I think you do very unwisely in this," said Faramir. "I don't think you should go with this creature. It's wicked."
"No, not altogether wicked," said Frodo.
"Not wholly, perhaps," said Faramir, "but malice eats it like a canker, and the evil is growing. He'll lead you to no good. If you will part with him, I'll give him safe conduct and guidance to any point on the borders of Gondor that he may name."
"He wouldn't take it," said Frodo. "He'd follow after me as he long has done, and I've promised many times to take him under my protection and to go where he led. You wouldn't ask me to break faith with him?"
"No," said Faramir, "but my heart would, for it seems less evil to counsel another man to break troth than to do so oneself, especially if one sees a friend bound unwitting to his own harm. But no, if he'll go with you, you must now endure him. But I don't think you are holden to go to Cirith Ungol, of which he has told you less than he knows. That much I perceived clearly in his mind. Don't go to Cirith Ungol."
"Where then shall I go?" said Frodo.
"Back to the Black Gate and deliver myself up to the guard? What do you know against this place that makes its name so dreadful?"
Nothing certain, said Faramir. We of Gondor do not ever pass east of the road in these days, and none of us younger men has ever done so, nor has any of us set foot upon the mountains of Shadow. Of them we know only old report and the rumour of bygone days. But there is some dark terror that dwells in the passes above Minas Morgul. If Cirith Ungol is named, old men and masters of lore will blanch and fall silent. The valley of Minas Morgul passed into evil very long ago, and it was a menace and a dread while the banished enemy dwelt yet far away, and Ithilien was still for the most part in our keeping. As you know, that city was once a strong place, proud and fair, Minas Ithil, the twin sister of our own city. But it was taken by fell men, whom the enemy in his first strength had dominated, and who wandered homeless and masterless after his fall. It is said that their lords were men of Numenor, who had fallen into dark wickedness. To them the enemy had given rings of power, and he had devoured them. Living ghosts they were become, terrible and evil. After his going they took Minas Ithil, and dwelt there, and they filled it, and all the valley about, with decay. It seemed empty, and was not so, for a shapeless fear lived within the ruined walls. 9 lords there were, and after the return of their master, which they aided and prepared in secret, they grew strong again. Then the 9 riders issued forth from the gates of horror, and we could not withstand them. Do not approach their citadel, you will be espied. It is a place of sleepless malice, full of lidless eyes. Do not go that way. But where else will you direct me? Said Frodo. You can't yourself, you say, guide me to the mountains, nor over them. But over the mountains I'm bound, by solemn undertaking to the council, to find a way or perish in the seeking. And if I turn back, refusing the road in its bitter end, where then shall I go among elves or men? Would you have me come to Gondor with this thing, the thing that drove your brother mad with desire? What spell would it work in Minas Tirith? Shall there be 2 cities of Minas Morgul, grinning at each other across a dead land filled with rottenness? I would not have it so, said Faramir. Then what would you have me do? I know not. Only I would not have you go to death or to torment. And I don't think that Mithrandir would have chosen this way. Yet since he's gone, I must take such paths as I can find, and there is no time for long searching, said Frodo. It's a hard doom and a hopeless errand, said Faramir. But at the least, remember my warning. Beware of this guide, Smeagol. He's done murder before now. I read it in him, he sighed. Well, so we meet and part, Frodo, son of Drogo. You have no need of soft words. I don't hope to see you again on any other day under this sun. But you shall go now with my blessing upon you, and upon all your people. Rest a little while food is prepared for you. I would gladly learn how this creeping Smeagol became possessed of the thing of which we speak, and how he lost it, but I will not trouble you now. If ever beyond hope you return to the lands of the living, and we retell our tales, sitting by a wall in the sun, laughing at old grief, you shall tell me then. Until that time, or some other time beyond the vision of the seeing stones of Numenor, farewell. He rose and bowed low to Frodo, and drawing the curtain, passed out into the cave. Chapter 7. Journey to the Crossroads. Frodo and Sam returned to their beds, and lay there in silence, resting for a little, while men bestirred themselves, and the business of the day began. After a while water was brought to them, and then they were led to a table where food was set for 3. Faramir broke his fast with them. He had not slept since the battle on the day before, yet he didn't look weary. When they'd finished they stood up. May no hunger trouble you on the road, said Faramir. You have little provision, but some small store of food fit for travellers I have ordered to bestow in your packs. You will have no lack of water as you walk in Ithilien, but don't drink of any stream that flows from Imlad Morgul, the Valley of Living Death. This also I must tell you. My scouts and watchers have all returned, even some that have crept within sight of the Morannon. They all find a strange thing. The land is empty. Nothing is on the road, and no sound of foot or horn or bowstring is anywhere to be heard. A waiting silence broods above the nameless land. I don't know what this portends, but the time draws swiftly to some great conclusion. Storm is coming. Hasten while you may. If you are ready, let us go. The sun will soon rise above the shadow. The hobbits' packs were brought to them, a little heavier than they had been, and also two stout staves of polished wood, shod with iron, and with carven heads through which ran plaited leathern thongs. "I have no fitting gifts to give you at our parting," said Faramir, "but take these staves. They may be of service to those who walk or climb in the wild. The men of the White Mountains use them, though these have been cut down to your height and newly shod. They are made of the fair tree Lebethron, beloved of the wood rites of Gondor, and a virtue has been set upon them of finding and returning. May that virtue not wholly fail under the shadow into which you go." The hobbits bowed low. "Most gracious host," said Frodo, "it was said to me by Elrond Half-Elven that I should find friendship upon the way, secret and unlooked for. Certainly I looked for no such friendship as you have shown. To have found it turns evil to great good." Now they made ready to depart. Gollum was brought out of some corner or hiding-hole, and he seemed better pleased with himself than he had been, though he kept close to Frodo and avoided the glance of Faramir. "Your guide must be blindfolded," said Faramir, "but you and your servant Samwise are released from this, if you wish." Gollum squealed and squirmed and clutched at Frodo when they came to bind his eyes, and Frodo said, "Blindfold us all three and cover up my eyes first, and then perhaps he'll see that no harm is meant." This was done, and they were led from the cave of Heneth Anun. After they had passed the passages and stairs, they felt the cold morning air, fresh and sweet, about them. Still blind, they went on for some little time, up and then gently down. At last the voice of Faramir ordered them to be uncovered. They stood under the boughs of the woods again. No noise of the falls could be heard, for a long southward slope lay now between them and the ravine in which the stream flowed. To the west they could see light through the trees, as if the world came there to a sudden end, at a brink looking out only onto the sky. "Here is the last parting of our ways," said Faramir. "If you take my counsel, you will not turn eastward yet. Go straight on, for thus you will have the cover of the woodland for many miles. On your west is an edge where the land falls into the great vales, sometimes suddenly and sheer, sometimes in long hillsides. Keep near to this edge and the skirts of the forest. In the beginning of your journey you may walk under daylight, I think. The land dreams in a false peace, and for a while all evil is withdrawn. Fare you well while you may." He embraced the hobbits then, after the manner of his people, stooping and placing his hands upon their shoulders and kissing their foreheads. "Go with the good will of all good men," he said. They bowed to the ground. Then he turned, and without looking back, he left them and went to his two guards that stood at a little distance away. They marvelled to see with what speed these green-clad men now moved, vanishing almost in the twinkling of an eye. The forest where Faramir had stood seemed empty and drear, as if a dream had passed. Frodo sighed and turned back southward. As if to mask his disregard of all such courtesy, Gollum was scrabbling in the mould at the foot of a tree. "Hungry again already," thought Sam. "Well, now for it again."
"Have they gone at last?" said Gollum. "Nasty, wicked men. Smeagol's neck still hurts him. Yes, it does. Let's go."
"Yes, let us go," said Frodo. "But if you can only speak ill of those who showed you mercy, keep silent."
"Nice master," said Gollum. Smeagol was only joking. Always forgives, he does. Yes, yes. Even nice master's little tricks is. Oh, yes. Nice master. Nice Smeagol.
Frodo and Sam didn't answer. Hoisting their packs and taking their staves in hand, they passed on into the woods of Ithilien. Twice that day they rested and took a little of the food provided by Faramir. Dried fruits and salted meat, enough for many days, and bread enough to last while it was still fresh. Gollum ate nothing. The sun rose and passed overhead unseen, and began to sink, and the light through the trees to the west grew golden, and always they walked in cool green shadow, and all about them was silence. The birds seemed all to have flown away or to have fallen dumb. Darkness came early to the silent woods, and before the fall of night they halted, weary, for they had walked 7 leagues or more from Henneth Annwn. Frodo lay and slept away the night on the deep mould beneath an ancient tree. Sam beside him was more uneasy. He woke many times, but there was never a sign of Gollum, who had slipped off as soon as the others had settled to rest. Whether he had slept by himself in some hole nearby, or had wandered restlessly prowling through the night, he did not say. But he returned with the first glimmer of light, and roused his companions.
"Must get up. Yes, they must," he said. "Long ways to go still, south and east. Hobbits must make haste."
That day passed much as the day before had gone, except that the silence seemed deeper. The air grew heavy, and it began to be stifling under the trees. It felt as if thunder was brewing. Gollum often paused, sniffing the air, and then he would mutter to himself and urge them to greater speed. As the third stage of the day's march drew on, and afternoon waned, the forest opened out, and the trees became larger and more scattered. Great ilexes of huge girth stood dark and solemn in wide glades, with here and there among them hoary ash trees, and giant oaks just putting out their brown-green buds. About them lay long lawns of green grass, dappled with celandine and anemones, white and blue, now folded for sleep. And there were acres populous with the leaves of woodland hyacinths. Already their sleek bell-stems were thrusting through the mould. No living creature, beast or bird, was to be seen, but in these open places Gollum grew afraid, and they walked now with caution, flitting from one long shadow to another. Light was fading fast when they came to the forest end. There they sat under an old gnarled oak that sent its roots twisting like snakes down a steep, crumbling bank. A deep, dim valley lay before them. On its further side the woods gathered again, blue and grey under the sullen evening, and marched on southwards. To the right the mountains of Gondor glowed, remote in the west, under a fire-flecked sky. To the left lay darkness, the towering walls of Mordor, and out of that darkness the long valley came, falling steeply in an ever-widening trough towards the Anduin. At its bottom ran a hurrying stream. Frodo could hear its stony voice coming up through the silence, and beside it on the hither side a road went winding down like a pale ribbon, down into chill grey mists that no gleam of sunset touched. There it seemed to Frodo that he descried far off, floating as it were on a shadowy sea, the high dim tops and broken pinnacles of old towers forlorn and dark. He turned to Gollum. "Do you know where we are?" he said.
"Yes, master. Dangerous places. This is the road from the Tower of the Moon, master, down to the ruined city by the shores of the river. The ruined city, yes. Very nasty place, full of enemies. We shouldn't have taken men's advice. Hobbits have come a long way out of the path. Must go east now, away up there." He waved his skinny arm towards the darkling mountains. "And we can't use this road. Oh, no. Cruel peoples come this way, down from the tower."
Frodo looked down onto the road. At any rate, nothing was moving on it now.
It appeared lonely and forsaken, running down to empty ruins in the mist.